Welcome to the In Hope Podcast, where each Monday we drop a new episode to help strengthen unity in the body of Christ. We want you to be part of the conversation, so make sure you comment, like, share, and follow. I'm your host, Preach. We got a great conversation for you today. Let's get into it. It starts off with, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and Jesus is that Word, right? And it goes on to say the Word became flesh, and it's talking about Jesus. And so we see here that Jesus is God. Whatever we know about Jesus, we know about God. Mm-hmm. Like, so there's no knowing more of Jesus than God, because what you know of Jesus, that's what you know of God. Right. And so that was just really interesting to kind of see them like, wait a minute. So that was good.
That's
one.
Good argument. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And so that was
what was that in? That was a
John 14.
No, where were you?
Oh, at? FCA.
Oh, FCA.
So yeah, over at over in Falcon Ridge, we do FCA there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You go host.
So
it?
It's every Thursday I come in, yeah, and help out.
Just help out.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was going to the one at the CUNA High School.
Yeah.
Pretty regularly. Yeah, nice. We actually did some worship things there.
That's so awesome.
The guy who the teacher that helps host it is the shop teacher.
Okay, cool.
So we opened
up
his shop, and I brought our equipment from our
and nice.
I had a youth sing with me too from the FCA, which was
good.
Cool.
That's so cool.
That was last year. We need to do it again.
Yeah. And they still have that going, right? Are you sure?
The FCA is still going, yeah.
Okay, good, mm-hmm. good. Because I know the middle school was having a hard time getting one going.
I don't know if the middle school has one.
They don't. And so I'm hoping we can get some. I was trying to get involved with their track.
Oh, okay.
But I never heard back. So hopefully maybe in the future I'll be able to slide in there.
Nice. Was that your sport?
Get something going. Track and football.
Track.
Yeah, track and football. So I played in high school. I played football, track, and basketball. And basketball, I just did 1 year, and then the rest, it was track and football. And so those, I would say if you list my sports, I have a hard time. I kind of, track and football are kind of tied.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say those are kind of tied. I prioritized football more while I was in high school, but then looking back, I love track. Yeah, it's track and football, and then I'll play. I mean, I'll try almost anything just because I like playing, but those were definitely my top. So, thank you. But yeah, that was my brother's sport. My brother was the basketball player. Guy. Yeah. So
how many siblings you got?
I have four siblings. I'm the fifth of five.
Youngest.
Yeah. And so my brother right above me, he's 2 years ahead of me.
Okay.
And so when I was a sophomore, he was a senior. And so he played basketball all 4 years. That was his thing. He loved basketball. My two older brothers, my sister didn't play sports. My two older brothers didn't play much either. The second oldest, he played a little bit of sports while he was in high school.
Where'd you grow up at?
It was California.
Okay.
Yeah, Southern California. So Division II California. Sports. So it's all opposite up there too. So I know out here it's like five. No, now it's 6A, right?
Oh,
6A.
I actually don't know.
Okay. So yeah.
I'm not very versed in the sports.
I
world
hear you. So yeah, out here it's with sports, it's the whole A thing, right? So like Division One or 1A is the smallest. Mm. A is the smallest. 1A is the smallest, and then 6A is the biggest. So the higher
probably
you go
1A.
Up. Yeah.
Because I'm from very small town.
Yeah.
That sounds actually kind of familiar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the bigger you go up, the higher the number of A's, I guess, the bigger the school. Out in California, it's the opposite. Division One is kind of like in college. It's
which
the
makes more sense, honestly. It feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, that's how most of the sports are, right?
Biggest.
That one college and whatnot, that's how you see it, right?
Yeah.
So that's how they do it in California. Division One's your biggest, and then it goes down. I don't know how many divisions there are, but we were D2.
Okay.
Where we were at. So
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't play a whole lot of sports in high school. I got better at basketball as an adult.
Okay.
I was not that good, and I had not the best coach because he didn't like let me play ever.
Yeah.
So I didn't get any better.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That and makes a big difference.
I just sat on the bench the whole time, even though we only had 7 players on our team.
Yeah.
So like basically the 5 starters were like the whole game. And then me and this other guy sat on the bench the whole time. It was
that's brutal. Like, you only have 7 players,
and we're losing by like 50 points every game.
Wow!
It's like, come on, just put me in. We're already losing.
Yeah, right. Oh man, no, yeah, that's brutal. What's it called?
That's small town sports, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
they didn't cut anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you didn't have to.
You couldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
You cut people. You didn't have enough people on your team.
Right.
Someone was sick. That was my only hope, and nobody got sick, I guess.
Right? So. Man, that's tough. That's tough. Yeah. It's funny because you almost are unaware until you get older and you start noticing like the sizes of different schools. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize, for example, how big our school was in comparison to how small some schools can actually be.
Mm-hmm.
To have a graduating class that's bigger than all of a school's population. Like I had no idea. So, I mean, when you're playing sports at Division II high school in California, you're thinking, I mean, this is how it is, right?
This
is just how schools are. You don't realize that. No, like to be playing with this on a team like this, you're playing at a higher competitive rate than, you know, a D2 or a D4 or a D5, right?
Just because of what your options. Yeah,
exactly. And then, what's it called? Yeah. To have such a big population, you don't realize, oh, my school is big. You just think this is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing for me with church. So when I first started going to a church, cause I'd never attended church, right? Didn't even visit churches. So first church I ever went to was like a 3,000 person church. I just thought that was
church,
right? Like, and I didn't know if somebody would have asked, I wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, I go to a big church. The youth group was like over 400 people.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And it's like, oh yeah, I just go to church. Right.
Yeah.
Like I never would have thought of our church as a big mega church. No, not even close.
Like most churches, the percentage wise are like around 100.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I mean, and it's I want to say if you look at 200, it's over. I want to say it's like 90%, somewhere between 80% and 90% at least is 200 people or less.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a big percentage.
Yeah. Right. And so when you're looking at that, I didn't think a thing of it, didn't realize. And so to be involved at a church like that and to see things like that is. Didn't realize until I got out of that bubble and I started, you know, visiting some other churches. Mm-hmm. And as I grew up and got, it's funny, the older I got, the smaller the church. Every time I switched churches, going to smaller and smaller churches. The first couple were both, you know, in the 3,000s. Like the first one was around 3,000, but it was getting bigger. And I think it's bigger than, and so the next church I went to was right around that same size.
Yeah.
But then from there I went to a small church cause I went down to a church that was about 750 people.
Yeah. I think that might be kind of common actually.
Yeah.
Because you know, big church definitely has its place in the world.
Oh yeah.
Because I think those are kind of like the bigger nets, so to speak.
Yeah.
Where
absolutely.
People can like cast, come and just, not necessarily know everybody. Right. Cause it's easy to be a fly on the wall and just kind of come and like, taste and see and not have too many people approach you maybe, which some big churches do that well, but a lot of times they're so big that like, it's really easy to just be a fly on the wall
and some
kind of
people
see
like,
what's up.
That's
and
what some
that's
people
what
prefer.
Most people first coming into the church kind of want.
Yeah.
And so they're great for that. And then, I know that was kind of our experience too.
Yeah.
We got smaller, because we wanted to go deeper and it's, you can get deeper with people when you're in a closer, smaller community than when you're in a giant one.
Yeah.
You might not even see the same people every week.
No.
Because they, especially when they have like 4 or 5 services, like a lot of the bigger churches do.
Yeah. Unless you kind of have like your section, like your niche, your section and whatnot. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't even realize that the church was as big as it was. It's like I had my people.
Yeah.
So that was my concept. Like,
and that can definitely happen within the bigger church, which is great.
Yeah.
I think, and that's what small groups are so good for. Right?
Exactly.
And if most churches have a strong desire to have small groups. Mm-hmm. But usually it's a very small percentage of the church that's actually attending them.
Exactly.
So not as many people are enjoying that kind of like smaller, tight knit community. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's one of those things. I mean, like my people, all of us were highly involved. And so we naturally built our own small community.
Yeah.
And we were the ones that were there regularly, different events and helping lead stuff, being part of student leadership and all that type of thing. And so, we just kind of, that helped a lot with building community there and not just getting lost, but it is. It's so easy when it's bigger. And looking back, even then, I could realize there were some that just kind of slipped out. Mm-hmm. But it makes a difference if you're able to.
Yeah. And again, I mean, that's the beauty. I think I'm always a big proponent of just the multitude of churches.
Yeah.
Because you get those different experiences at different lifetime, different parts of your life. And that's why I'm also not as against like people jumping from church to church. I don't think you should just do that.
Yeah,
but sometimes there is like a season, mm-hmm. and you need to dig into something deeper or go into or whatever it is, and that's kind of been a lot of what's pushed us to switch churches at different times.
Yeah, you can discover different things.
Yeah, and you can discover like different things, and then you realize that one of the cool things is that you realize that there is some familiarity between all of them.
Absolutely.
And then you start going like, what is that? And you're like, oh, that's Jesus.
Yeah. There he is. There it is.
Yep. Cause his people are in all of them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the really awesome thing about the Big C Church is that you can have that familiarity no matter where you go.
Yeah. When you learn to appreciate more as well.
Yeah.
I feel like when you venture out and you start to plug in to different communities. Mm-hmm. You start to learn different cultures, different values as well. And now you're broadening your appreciation for different practices and different things. That, for example, I mean, if you go from a highly contemporary setting into a little more liturgical setting. Mm-hmm. Now you're starting to understand and appreciate, hopefully you start to learn and appreciate some of the liturgical practices and some of the different things that they do. And it just helps to broaden your view of the church and your appreciation for the different practices. And it deepens your own personal walk and faith and how you see things.
Yeah.
So I can absolutely understand that. I think that is something where even if you are a member of a single church for your whole life, you grow up there and then you end up dying there, like get out and visit and appreciate other ones. That way you don't end up isolating and kind of becoming this cocoon where this is the right way of doing it. And you look at others as though they're doing things wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, I love actually just going and visiting other churches because there is that like familiarity and like you're like, oh, there's just like Jesus people everywhere. It's really awesome.
Exactly.
And you get to see the whole body.
Yep. I remember when we first started with Limitless, one of the reasons we started it at 12 was when we were regularly meeting. And one of the primary reasons for that was me and Christina saying we want to give ourselves that option of going and visiting an early service somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And then coming.
And be able to do both. Yeah.
Yeah. Being That's able a cool to do option, that. Yeah. So.
And of course, some of them do night. You know what's kind of cool is like the difference between morning church and night church even.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's like a different culture almost.
Different crowd. Absolutely. And
there's a different feel because in the morning you're just kind of in a different state of mind than you are in the evening too. So there's like this whole different thing. I like going to evening services every once in a while. I haven't done an evening service in forever, but they are kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. One, and this isn't across the board for sure, but one thing that I've noticed is Saturday night crowds. Those I feel like tend to be, the word that keeps coming to my mind is the more rowdy. I feel like Saturday night crowds tend to be a little more rowdy, a little more rougher background.
Yeah.
Is kind of, I feel like it's usually a rougher background.
Yeah.
Sometimes younger. It's like I'm choosing this over what would be my party life.
Yeah.
Right. So this is
great.
Right. So it's like, if this is what I'm doing over my party life, that means I still have party in me. Yeah. So this is going to be a little,
be a little more party. Which is great. I love that. I think church, doesn't have to be a certain way.
No, absolutely not.
Culture wise. Right. Yeah. Like we all believe the same things, but there are those like different ways of doing things, culture, absolutely. Like music and rowdiness or even like the, you know, like having, like a screamo rock band up there. Like I've seen those and I'm like, that's not really necessarily for me, but and there's part of me is like, well, that's kind of cool. Right.
Yep. Yep.
Sure. And, you know, something I've always wanted to visit actually, and I have in some cases, like, been around, but like, I like the Southern Black church.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like
come
it's
on.
So different
how
from,
you not?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I just love that.
Yeah.
Like I've watched them online and stuff. And I was like, I wouldn't mind going to a Southern Black church. That'd be kind of
ready
fun.
For the long haul.
Yeah.
Be ready
for the long haul. Right? They do long services. Yeah.
Bring snacks. Or fast.
Especially for the kids.
Or know you're fasting.
No. No. Yeah. That'd be super fun to go, be a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. So and it is, it's different culture. And you have to go with that expectation understanding.
Yeah. It's going to be a little different.
What's it called? This is not, the best recommendation, but it's just, and I'm not even going to say I'm recommending it. But it's just, there's a show and they kind of point and make fun of difference there between like a contemporary white church and a black church.
Yeah.
It's a show. Oh, I can't even remember his name. Oh,
is it like John? The actor, or something?
It's Blackish is what the show is called.
Blackish.
Yeah. It's called Blackish. And it's a black family who lives in it's like a real nice suburb, well-to-do neighborhood. They're invited to a church and then they want to give the impression that they regularly go to church and they have their own. So they invite them to pretty much the guy's mom's church.
Okay.
And it's funny cause you see the difference between the two.
So they go to two different churches.
They go to two different churches and it's both of these families.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It's good stuff.
That's so good.
And it does, it kind of plays on that idea of, okay, within the black church, you're going to be there a long time. Like
it's, long time.
Yeah. So it's,
and there might be some praise breaks, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's what I always thought was like, that looks fun.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It looks funner in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I'm like, why aren't we more fun?
Yeah. Well,
it's plain white.
It's order. It's order. And it's, I feel like it's one of those things also of, again, culture.
Yeah, it's just a cultural difference.
There's a
yeah.
cultural difference of time expectation.
Yeah.
And
well, even Southern Pentecostal churches are probably longer, too.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's definitely not just black, white.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's definitely not just that. No. There's a culture where some are saying, well, this is what Sunday is for.
Yeah.
So if you're here until the sun goes down, then you're here until the sun goes down. Like we're going to stop when the spirit leads us to stop. Right. When the spirit says it's time. Right. So, but there's just kind of that expectation and that understanding of this is going to be a while. Like carve the time out versus we're going. And there's the other mindset. And it's not to say one is right or wrong.
Yeah.
But you have to understand this is where you're falling of, well, we are going to respect people's time and we know they kind of have things to do.
Right.
We're giving them this boundary of what we're going to demand of them or ask of them. I shouldn't even say demand. We're going to ask of them. And then so there's kind of that difference.
Right.
Of,
and we got cultural things too. Like, you know, it's hard for people to pay attention for that long.
Yeah.
Nowadays. So it's like, you could do a 3-hour service, but are people jacked out for the second half?
Well, and again, yeah, that,
and that could totally be true.
And that's going to come back into that interaction, interaction that you're seeing between the different Southern church and your more contemporary laid back. If you're listening, if you're not part of what's going on, then you're going to check. You're only going to be able to hold in there for an hour.
Up in this place.
But but if you're involved, like if you're part of, and that's one of the things, somebody was talking about this. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Brady. So it was Brady Shear. He does a podcast called Pro Church Tools.
Okay.
And he was talking about this and how within that gospel culture that there is a back and forth. It's not he's doing the sermon and we're listening.
Which I actually really like.
Yeah, it's that we are in this together, right? And so you'll regularly see them walking around, getting close to the congregants and literally looking at people and talking to them and getting a back and forth. And so there's that, you're not just sitting there listening.
Yeah.
So you can. Like. Yeah. I so like you're going, you can end up going a bit longer because you're not worried about the attention span as much.
Yes. I can see that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Oh man, man, we haven't even started on the subject today.
Yeah. Okay. It's fun talking about church though.
No, yeah, absolutely. But this gets into, like how long can we stand it? We're going to be talking about burnout, right?
Yeah. I think it flows in real nice.
Right. So
I don't know. Is there, we should look, I wonder if there's a study on burnout rates versus in 1 hour church versus 3 hour church. Dude,
that's That'd be big. Interesting. That would be really interesting to look at.
What would be funny if it was like less? Like you never know.
No.
Like, well, I don't know. I don't actually have numbers. I can assume like what the burnout rates would be different, but like maybe that interactivity that you're talking about would actually decrease the burnout rate, maybe?
Absolutely. Well, and one of the reasons, now I'm going out on a limb here, absolutely going out on a limb, but I would be interested to see that because I'm curious if the burnout rate would be lower, right?
Yeah.
And those longer, more interactives, and primarily because of, as we were talking about, you were saying it looks funner. Right.
Yeah.
Like it looks fun. It looks and so what I'm thinking of, there's more joy, right? More expressive joy. And not saying that there's not, you know, joy and on the
totally.
But just that expression of joy and like enjoying the sermon, enjoying the service. And one of the reasons I say that is because joy in ministry, like while you're doing ministry, is one of the one of the things that will help battle burnout. Or help come against it. If you are finding joy in what you're doing, if you're enjoying it, there was one minister, and I know I've said this before, but there's another definitely much bigger, more prominent minister. So I'll, you know, point at him just for some, right, for
not
some,
me. Yeah, it's not me.
I'm going to, what's it called? Lean on his, what's it called? His credentials, right? Doing ministry for over 30 years. And he says how in very, very successful ministry, but he was giving advice to a youth pastor. Youth pastor asked, he said, I've been in youth ministry for 10 years. I want to avoid burnout, right? I want to make sure I'm in it for the long haul. And he asked for some pointers. And one of the very first things he says is do what you love.
Yeah.
Do what you love. If you
that's important. Yeah.
Right.
So getting the ministry that's going to fill your cup. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like, when you're in any job, no matter what you're doing, right? In any job, this happens, especially it happens within ministry, where you're going to have to do some things that you don't enjoy.
Sure. Yeah.
But he's saying, make sure.
Don't
make that your main thing. Make sure you are investing heavily and giving the majority of your time, effort, and energy into the things that you actually enjoy, the things that you love. And he says that will help you from burnout. Yeah. Well, within the Southern Church, the sermon giving, a lot of times, the sermon, the worship, what you're seeing there on a Sunday worship service or midweek or whatever, what you're seeing within those gospel services, a lot of times that's where you're going to find a lot of joy.
Yeah.
People really enjoying that. And so that would lead me to think maybe the burnout wouldn't be as high.
Yeah.
There.
Well, yeah. And I know that when I'm doing like worship and stuff and I'm actually like connecting with God.
Yeah.
Right. Cause sometimes it can become, I think sometimes burnout becomes a thing where we're not intentional with the ministry we're doing.
Yeah.
So as a worship person, if I'm just trying to play the songs well, that's going to burn out real quick versus like, I'm going to try to connect with God in every song that I'm singing. Mm. Because one of the things I wrote down when you talked about what this topic is going to be that I think leads to burnout is not abiding in him.
Yes.
And we had a really good ministry tool for the, or discipleship tool for this called the rhythm of rest.
Yes.
And, you know, God commands us to take a Sabbath, and then Jesus later tells us like that was not for God. That was actually for you.
Yep.
The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And we realize that that's super important. We have to have these times of rest. And I think those rests isn't just like sleep. It's that time of abiding in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see in a 3-hour service, if there's a lot of abide time, that would actually be very life-giving and actually be the opposite, take you the opposite way of burnout.
Yeah.
But also the same in a short service. If we're able to really connect with God and worship and really spend time like maybe even praying during service or whatever. But I think even outside of that, right?
Yeah.
So if we're not getting any kind of, especially for those of us that may have served or been part of a staff in a church, church time is not necessarily abide time because that's a lot of pouring out and like helping the congregation. Although it definitely can be. Like I definitely got a lot out of worshiping as a worship leader, and I received as much as I gave.
Yeah.
In those times, but then also like there was a lot of setup and tear down and all those other things that like really wore me out. Right. So I needed to have some other abide time where it's just me and God. And I think, we see that, we see Jesus do that constantly. I actually wrote down a couple of verses, that we use in our discipleship for this, which is Mark 1:35. It says, "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, went off to a solitary place where he prayed."
Yeah.
So Jesus right there is like modeling for us.
Absolutely.
Like this, the what we need to do to receive the power that we're going to take out into the world.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times when we have burnout, it's because we're trying to do everything under our own power. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to slip into that.
Yeah.
Like I know many times I've like failed to go off and pray with my Father. And just because I knew I was doing ministry, I knew it was good.
Yeah.
And we can kind of trick ourselves and be like, well, I'm doing the purpose. Mm-hmm. So I don't need the abide.
Mm-hmm.
because the abide is hard. And it takes, and especially in our modern culture where we're like, we need input to like, because it's a getaway and turn everything off and really just try to connect with God.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Absolutely.
And, again, Mark 6:30-32, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then because so many of the people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place.
Nice.
And again, along those lines of abide, John 15:4-5. He's talking about the vine and the branches.
Oh, no. I have that open here.
Is that what you got?
I have that open here, and we can't start at 4.
You want to read more of it?
Yeah, I'm going to read more of it. So here we go.
Look at this. So, this is God working right here.
There it is. All right. So
we didn't even know this.
In 15, I'm going to start at verse 1,
just
because there's something specific here that he says I want us to touch on as well. He says, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit." So I want us to think about that. Every branch that does not bear fruit, he takes away, right? Mm-hmm. And then at verse 4 is where he says, "Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me," right? And so he's talking about this idea of God taking away that which doesn't bear fruit. But how do we bear fruit?
By abiding.
By abiding.
Right.
Not by
so
doing.
So we can try to do it
not by
under
doing.
Our own power.
Yep.
And we're going to like burn ourselves out because
exactly.
We're just like, okay, I can do this. I'm a really good musician.
Yep.
I can make this happen. I can get people to where they need to be with God.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, wait, I need to be there with God first.
Exactly.
And that was something I really had to learn coming into ministry because music was definitely the thing that brought me into ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a lot more performative early on because, you know,
that's what
just
we know.
Human nature.
Exactly.
Right.
And
so I had to learn like, no, I need to be, if I'm really going to truly lead other people to God, I need to be connecting with God too.
Yeah.
And first, like in my practice time and in my quiet space.
Yeah.
And so I started to do that more and it definitely made it so much less Less performative.
Yeah.
I worried a lot less about when I made mistakes and stuff because I was like, that's not what it's about.
Exactly.
It's just about like being in, worshiping the God who, and ascribing worth to him in that moment. And then if I was doing it, then it was easier for other people to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that kind of comes right back to, I time and time again talk about, we have to be rather than do, right?
Yeah.
It's more about our being than it is our doing. And so when you first start to lead worship and it's more of a performance thing, it's kind of like, well, this is what I'm here to do.
Yeah.
Right. I'm here to do
God
worship,
gave you,
right?
Gave it to me to do.
Right. No,
but
he didn't call you to do worship. He called you to be a worshiper. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's, now, as you're being a worshiper, you might be one of those worshipers that help lead, you know, a congregation in worship. Mm-hmm. So now you're doing worship, but you're called to be a worshiper first.
Yeah.
Right. And that is, I mean, that's that abiding and then working from that overflow. And that's one of those things that I mentioned on the podcast. It was the Stories Unveiled podcast with Ashley Sears. She was asking me advice, what advice would I give? And at the end of that, I said, serve from your overflow.
Yes.
Like that is, you have to serve from your overflow. If you're not, then that I feel like leads to burnout more than anything.
Oh yeah. We had something we always said with this. So there's like a pendulum, right?
Yeah.
Of abiding time and being with God.
Yeah.
And then going out and doing the things that he calls us to do. So there is that, right? Or being it.
Yeah,
if we're going to change the language. What we always said was work from rest, not rest from work.
Yes.
Because what we tend to do as humans is go. And then it's like, man, I'm so tired. I got to rest.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying just now is like, no, it's the other way around. Like, and this is what Jesus did. If you look at when he's doing these things, he's going off and then he's doing the ministry. He goes and he prays and he spends the quiet time. And then he goes to his disciples and that's his like end time and building and like helping them.
Yep.
And then he goes out to the crowds.
Yeah.
And so it's work from rest, from the overflow.
Exactly. Well, and you think about it, even just in his life, right? In his life for the longest time, we've believed Jesus, you know, died around 33, but he had about 3 years of ministry.
Yeah.
Right. And so for the first 30 years of his life, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you have 30 whole years here where he is working on being, right? And he's filling up. And then you have 3 years of, it's almost like he tithed his time to ministry, right? And you have this overflow from a place of 30 years of him abiding and growing in relationship with the Father. And like, so he only gave a fraction, 10%, like of his full time on earth. And it looks like that was that those 3 years were an overflow of him abiding and being in that place of being for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And you see it, like you point out all throughout scripture, right? Him going off in the morning. And all the, and him talking to the disciples about it, that when he came down from the mountain of transfiguration and they asked, why couldn't we cast this demon out? And you could, he says, well, this only comes out by prayer and fasting.
Yeah.
He's been praying.
He's telling
he's
us.
Been fasting.
This is what you need to do.
Like he, and so, and you see, I mean, they look at him, they're like, these are Jewish men, by the way, like they know the Psalms. They pray more in a day than a lot of Western Christians will pray within a year.
Right.
And they look at him and they say, teach us to pray. They can see there's something there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can tell he's working from this place and he tells us himself.
Yeah.
I'm only doing what I see the Father do. I'm only saying what I hear the Father's.
Yeah.
That comes from a place of abiding.
I always wondered, this is something that always comes to me, like, did he need to do that? Right? Because he was God incarnate.
Yeah.
Did he need to go off and pray? Or was he just modeling that for us really well?
I think even...
It's an interesting question.
It
right?
is. I would want to add...
But either way, he did it.
Yeah.
And he was... So either he had to do it... mm-hmm. or he really wanted us to know that it was important.
Yeah.
And so either way, he's saying, go yeah. pray, go be with God. And that's where the power is going to come
yeah.
from.
Yeah. Well, and I would add in also, I think I would ask, did he need to, or did he want to?
Or did he want to? Yeah.
He wanted to be with his father. Did yep. he just want to be with his father that much? And to me, like, what an example that is,
mm-hmm.
right?
Like yeah.
That's what we should be aiming for,
right?
Is it's that heart and that mind place of, yes, I need this. Like, God, I need you. You're what I need. I can't do this without you. But also, I just want you. Like, I just want to be with you. There's two songs that come to my mind, one secular and one Christian. when I think about it that way, one is, I want to say her last name is Dylan. I want to say it's Bethany Dylan. But she sings this one song called, I Want Your Presence. And it goes into this idea of, you know, I appreciate these things, but what I want more than anything is your presence, just to be with you, right? Yeah. And there's a few songs that we have like that. But it's really this idea of just like, I want to be with you. Like, you're what I want.
Yeah, Make Room is a good one,
yeah,
too.
Right? Yeah, right? And then there's this country song. I can't remember who sings it. But I Want to Make You Feel Wanted is what it's called. So he's obviously singing to a girl on this one. But it's this idea of like, I want you to know that I want you. It's that, yeah. it's that idea of, I'm not doing this to receive things. I'm not doing this because I have to, but it's just purely from this place of, you are what I want.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important when, now this is a complete side lib, and I don't know, maybe somebody needs to hear this. I think about that when it comes to, me and you have kind of had this conversation before. Mm-hmm. I think about that when it comes to adoption, right? Because
mm-hmm.
there's this place of, in adoption, we see such a beautiful example of how God has adopted us.
Yeah.
And it wasn't from this, like, it wasn't owed to us in any way, right? It's not like, you know, we were his children. He's like, okay, I guess I'll take care of them, right? But it's literally this, no, I wanted you. I came, I sought you out, and yeah. I picked you. I want you. I don't have to take you.
We are worth something, man.
Right? And yeah. it's this choice. On behalf of a parent to say, no, I'm going to make you my child.
Yeah.
Right. Not you're my child. So I guess I have to take care of you according to the law.
Yeah. And then from our side, it's an understanding of like, there is like this.
Yeah.
I like the God-shaped hole uh-huh. reference.
Yeah.
Because there is like this piece of mm-hmm. us that's like missing.
Yeah.
And we, before we know God, we really don't know what it is.
Yeah.
We just, there's like a longing in our souls. And I think God just puts that there. Like
yeah.
there's this missing thing. It's like, this is what I'm going to fill when you allow me to fill it. And we really just seek the worldly things to yeah. fill it in, like oh, yeah. money or fame or whatever those things are. But then I've seen so many people come from the, like, I achieved all those things that I thought yep. were the thing.
Absolutely.
I got the money, I got the fame, I got all those things. And there was still a hole.
Yeah.
And that's what God's telling us, like, come abide in me
yeah.
and you will have life.
Yeah.
Like, be a part of the vine. Cause apart from me, you really are nothing.
Yeah.
And if you look at those testimonies from those people, like, they really felt like, well, I achieved a lot of fruit,
uh-huh.
so to speak, as far as like the worldly fruit was exactly. concerned. They didn't fully understand what he meant by fruit, obviously.
Yeah.
But I achieved all this fruit and like, mm-hmm. I got all this stuff, but like, I still feel like I still feel like nothing. I feel like I've been burned.
Yeah.
And that's like a really consistent message you hear from people who've really achieved everything, is that they still feel like a little bit like they're missing something.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man. See, now I have to find this because that just makes me think with the, you have this comparison of, well, I've achieved so much according to world standard, right?
Yeah, world standard.
And yeah. I feel like we can do that in the church too.
Sure.
I feel like we can look at certain things as, okay, here's the fruit. Here's the fruit. And we think that we're producing so much fruit when that's not the fruit God is talking about.
Yeah.
And so let me see.
I think the fruit is people, right?
Right. So let's see. Where is it out? Okay. Not everyone. So this is Matthew 7. He says, Matthew 7, verse 21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name?
Yep.
And cast out demons in your name? And do many mighty works in your name? And then will I declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.
Isn't that crazy? Like when I remember reading that and going like, wait, so like someone can like go as far as casting out demons and
doing
still,
mighty words.
So like, obviously the name still has power, whether you are connected to God or not. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying you could do that. You could cast out demons and do mighty works in my name. But if you don't have that relationship with me, like it'll be all be for naught. That's again, you see this a lot too. And Paul actually is constantly, we were just reading Galatians. I think it was Galatians 3.
Yeah.
Where he talks a lot about like, it's not about your works.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
God has called you to do things and that's great.
Yeah.
But your faith is what brings you to God.
Oh man.
And that's another reference for that.
Like so.
Just you know, come know me.
So now this I feel like is also, I mean, that when I see this prophesy, cast out demons, do many mighty works, right? I'm thinking, okay, maybe these are things that people would have been using as measurements in the early church, right? I feel like today, if we were to rewrite this verse, we could also say, man, did I not preach to thousands? And, you know, did I not have, you know, millions of subscribers? Did I not pack out stadiums, right? Mm-hmm. And preach to thousands in your name? Did I not, where it says, you know, cast out demons and perform mighty works? Did I not raise so much for the kingdom, right? Like you have somewhere they're looking at, well, I mean, we're bringing in hundreds and thousands and doing so much and donations and missions and we're looking at measurements that we kind of set up as people, which a lot of times ends up being a numbers game, right? But all of those things are dues.
Yeah.
They're dues, right? But the fruit that we see in John that he's talking about, that's a place of being. It's abiding. And so often I think we can get caught up in all those different things that we miss that, okay, this fruit is a matter of my relationship and what is being produced from our relationship and that abiding.
Right.
And it's not going to come back to, you know, how many people have you seen, you know, make a call to salvation? How many, those are great things, but that's not,
well,
the,
it could be
that's not the
a reference to the fruits of the spirit that he calls out later too,
right?
Which is
exactly
love, patience, kindness, forbearance, long suffering,
right? And that all comes from being in step with the spirit.
It all comes from being in step with the spirit.
Right. That abiding.
And then all the other things will come through that.
Absolutely.
Right. Just like he says, the first two commandments, like love your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength and all your mind and love each other as yourself. And everything else will fall underneath those.
Yeah.
So there's not, it's not like go and do all these things.
Yeah.
It's like, just start with those two things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then everything else will come.
Absolutely. So, I'm at, refer back to my list here. We talked about do what you love, right? do what you love. We're definitely touching on that. Like keep our eyes on Jesus, abiding in him. You mentioned Sabbath, right? And
Sabbath,
I'm going to say rest.
Keep a Sabbath. Rest.
Rest, like get good sleep.
Which is abiding.
Maintain, yeah.
And take time within that rest to abide.
Yeah.
Do your own worship, your own personal worship, your own personal study, your own personal just prayer.
Yeah.
I think that if you're not doing that, you'll burn out a lot faster.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One that is often overlooked that is a passion of mine is working out.
Oh, yeah.
Like working out, staying healthy, staying physically healthy, challenging yourself physically to maintain health and wellness.
Yeah.
That will definitely help with your longevity. It's not the cure-all, for sure.
No, I get that one, though.
Yeah.
Not exactly doing really great here, but when I've been like, I've tried to play basketball with my son every Sunday, and the times when I haven't been able to play because I like hurt myself or whatever, I just like my energy levels go down, and it's harder to get things done, and it's like, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably the biggest struggle I have with keeping myself where I'm not feeling burned out.
Absolutely. I mean, there's far too much psychological, benefit scientifically for your body, your health, your wellness overall, mentally, spiritually, relationally, physically, when it comes to being physically active and taking care of yourself health-wise. Yeah. Right. And so when you look at that, then of course we always have to point back to, hey, your body's a temple, right? Like take care of it.
Take care of it.
Not for the sake of, like we're not idolizing the body or anything like that, but
I can swing the other way too, right?
But take care of it. Like, hey, your body's a temple, take care of it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things to where the better you do take care of that, the better you will be able to sustain and continue in ministry and not see those issues come. Cause it's not just, you have the energy factor, whether or not you're going to have the energy.
Yeah.
You're also going to have the health factor and whether or not you're going to have health issues creep in. There's the mental factor where you're going to mentally, you'll be clear. You won't have the mental fog, the fatigue and all of that stuff. Relationships end up being better because you're taking more well taken care of there. The stress, just stress alone.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like stress alone.
Every time I work out, I feel better.
Yeah.
Relieve stress. It's crazy.
So it's,
You're convicting me over here, bro. I know that's not your intention, but it's happening. But
no, it's one of those things to where, and you're not the only one. Look, okay, and this
we all got our things.
Yeah, no, and you're like, you're not the only one. So me and a friend, we've been messaging back and forth our run times and whatnot, and we're talking about doing
accountability
a couple
helps.
Of runs. Accountability is a huge thing,
yeah,
right?
For anything,
and so this touches on another one, which is having
godly relationships,
community. Yeah, godly relationships, close knit, and I almost want to say like peer to peer, discipleship.
Oh yeah, because I can tell you many times where I've gotten close to feeling burnout, and just even getting in a group, we did this as a staff a lot, which was awesome.
Yeah.
I encourage any staff to do this, but even outside of staff and people that are just attending church, like if you have that group of people that you can go that are going to pray for you in times or maybe even speak prophetic words over you because you're like, you're all trying to connect to God together, man, those have been some of the most encouraging, life-giving things ever. And we are created for community. I truly believe that. Like God, there's many verses on how we're supposed to do it together. I mean, that's what we're talking about a lot here is unity and having that unity of people around you to kind of intercede and you intercede for them and even sharpening each other with the word and those things that's a big one. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. So I think, and it's not, I would say it's really good to have me and Christina, we talk about this, have talked about it many times, is having relationships both in and outside of your place of ministry.
Yeah.
It is really good for you to have those type of relationships with those you're working with, but then also those that are outside of your ministry. Because sometimes you need to kind of step outside of there and maybe talk about some things that you can't talk about.
Well, yeah, totally.
With your coworkers or your boss or different things like that. And so it's really good to have that. And you just, I mean, you think about your network of relationships and you need to ask yourself, do I have different vantage points? Am I covering different vantage points? Do I have a friend who's also in ministry, but not attached to mine, where we can talk to? Do I have a friend who's outside of the ministry that, you know, can kind of give me that perspective as well? And so just having those different vantage points covered in your web, your network of friendships, and being able to touch on those and not being afraid to use them.
Yeah.
I think is big. We have to be willing to touch on those and not be afraid to use them. And at first, I think this is one of those big things. At first, it's awkward. Usually at first, if you're going to start getting into deeper conversations,
it's going to be awkward.
The type of conversations.
Well, you
got to
build a relationship first, usually.
Yep.
Because you got to build a certain level of trust.
Yeah. But the way you do that is digging.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's true.
Like, you have to. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to get down to that gold, a lot of times I feel like we stand by the river and we're like hoping that we'll see it and then just grab it. We got to dig. Like, we have to do some work. And sometimes it goes wrong.
Yeah. Sometimes it does.
Sometimes it goes
wrong. Sometimes you're going to get
hurt. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes it goes wrong.
And that doesn't mean stop trying.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's really, I mean, that's a lot of what I'm trying to do right now with NNYM. Which
yeah. I was thinking
creating
that same
pastor
thing,
network,
right?
So that they can do that. Yeah. And I think that could be true for anybody.
Yeah.
In any position.
Yep.
Within the church, but then also of course, like,
yeah,
having people outside of your church if you're just in a life group and stuff too.
But then especially with something like NNYM, right? And you have people who have had some of the same experiences.
Yeah.
Or will likely be facing similar experiences.
Or have had experiences you haven't had yet,
right?
That can speak into you.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's a peer that is outside of your own ministry.
Yep.
And being able to build those types of relationships, I feel like it's so big.
Yeah.
So big. And one of the reasons I like that idea of that peer-to-peer discipleship is it's saying, no, we're being intentional. We're trying to grow together. Right. Yeah. I think that is really big to know. We're going to feed into each other and we're going to receive from each other.
Yeah.
Right.
That's iron sharpens iron, right?
Right.
That's
right. I think so often as ministers, we pour out more than we let others pour into us.
Yes.
I mean, it's so easy. So easy to get caught pouring.
Yeah. I mean, like, minister burnout is huge.
Yeah.
There's burnout within the church and serving and all that as well. But like, pastors and youth pastors and kids pastors, all those, they get burned out a lot too, even though they're getting paid for the job.
Yeah. Well, and I would say the same thing with some very highly active volunteers, the ones that we call on for everything.
Yes. Well, and that's another thing we haven't even talked about yet. Right. Which is the disparity between those who serve within the church and those who just attend.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a bigger problem in America probably than other places.
Absolutely.
Just because of our kind of consumeristic culture.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, the best way to fix that is, like, if you see a need in your church, like, just jump in and help.
Right.
You know, because there are, it usually is like 10% of the people that are doing 100% of the work.
Exactly.
And most of them are also volunteers. Like, they're not getting paid. I know most kids staffs, like, besides the person leading the whole thing.
Exactly.
Is all volunteer.
Yeah.
That's probably, I think, the most underappreciated ministry within a church.
Yeah.
Because it's the most, you have to give the most, because you don't get to be a part of the service. You don't get to get fed.
Mm-hmm.
You're really pouring all out and you're in the back.
Yeah.
And kids are hard.
Yeah. Let's come on.
Harder
come
to some than others, though. That's why, Lord bless those who are called to kids ministry, because it's not for everybody, but the people that it is one of those like be where you're called.
Yeah.
And some people are just so called to child's ministry, and they're just so good at it. And absolutely. I'm just so grateful for those people, for my own kids and for the churches that I've been a part of, because that's a tough ministry. Yeah. And I think it has probably one of the higher burnout rates too, though, because of those kind of things.
Well, and that reminds me, right? We talked about this idea of doing what you love, right? Mm-hmm. And you have some people who are called to these different ministries that are difficult. I mean, almost every ministry has its difficulties, right? Yeah. But when we're talking about something like kids ministry, like that can be taxing, right? But you go in there and you're doing it and you're passionate and you're loving it. And to me, it reminds me of when I'm working out. Mm-hmm. Not everyone has this issue, but some people do. And they'll understand what I mean. It's when you are working out, you're feeling good, you're thriving, you're going hard, right? But when you hit your wall, you run into that brick wall. Yeah. It's not like, oh, I'm going to ease into a wall, or like this is a wall that's on wheels, and you know, I start pushing it, and then slowly and slowly I start to damper down. No, it's like one rep, I feel like I can do the next 20, and then the next rep, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like my arms aren't moving. Yeah. Right. Like somebody better be spotting me. Right. Cause this is not going up. I know I got the earlier reps in this set looked like I was going to go the whole way, but no, like I can't move my arms anymore.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things to where we can be doing something we love and we feel good and we're thriving and we're going hard. But by the time we hit the wall, it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. Like now, we've gone too long. And so as we're talking about this idea of Sabbath, of resting, right? Having those relationships, those friendships, working out, all of these different things that are meant to help prevent and mitigate burnout. Mm-hmm. You can't wait until you're, you know, nose deep to start doing those things.
Yeah.
Start doing those things from the start. Because that's what's going to keep the burnout away. If you wait until too long, you'll run up on that burnout before you know it, before you realize it. And now you're, rather than setting yourself on a good course that's keeping burnout away, now you're really trying to resist the oncoming burnout. So it's one of those things to where I feel like, we have to, a lot of these practices, get them started early before you think you need it.
Right.
That's when you need to do it. It's kind of like, like your oil change.
And a lot of that's self-work and time with God and all that, that we already talked about. But I think, I just wanted to throw this out there. If you're in a church and you're not called to kids ministry, we're all called to encourage each other.
Yes.
And I think that's something that probably doesn't happen enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where if we could just, that's a unity piece, right? We come around and be like, these are the people that are called to this ministry and that's not my ministry, but I can still go back and say, hey man, you guys are doing a great job. We really appreciate what you're doing. And, there's this thing that my wife always says, cause we're in, just a leadership trait in general when you're leading people. Do you know how do you know someone needs to be encouraged?
Mm.
And it's they're breathing.
Nice.
So we can do our part as the church around them, the people that are serving those ministries, and just try to encourage them as much as we can. And I know I haven't done that as much as I could have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also say that give them a week. Like maybe children's church isn't your thing. Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not going to be one of those volunteers that are in there every other week.
Yeah.
But maybe you can give a week within a quarter.
Sure.
Or within a year.
Yeah, I'll be a
right. Like once a quarter. I want to give you a week off. Yeah. Like let's give you some time, because we know that they're investing so much. So maybe this isn't your ministry and it's something that, you know, it's not the thing that you love that you can pour yourself into, but maybe this is one of those, this is something that needs to get done though. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give a little bit of my time here, right?
Yeah.
So that, and then I'm going to give the majority of my time over here where it's what I love to do.
Yeah.
So that me giving my little bit of time here, make sure that those who are doing it as their majority continue to do it.
Yeah, right.
As their majority.
Exactly. That they don't have a massive burnout and hit a wall.
Keep loving it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's big. So the last thing that I have, I'm going to hold and wait. Do you have any others?
No, that before. Was, I think we hit
them. Okay. Okay. Things, okay. So I'm gonna touch on this one. The last thing is actually the first thing. And it kind of comes back to this, to the abiding, which I mean, these are,
I think that's going to be the
right
most
up
important.
Front. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right up front, but this is something that it may seem so simple, but I don't think most ministers do this. Pray for perseverance.
Mm.
Like, pray that God would continue to give you strength, perseverance, and joy in what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think it seems so simple, right? It's just like, yeah, of course, right? But I don't know that most ministers actually spend time regularly asking God to give me perseverance. And help
give me power.
Yeah. Give me power.
Yeah.
Well, and I think sometimes it's like, give me power so I can lay hands on somebody.
Right. Yes. But power is all the things, right?
Exactly.
Like the power to do any of those things that we're called to do.
Right. Here, let me look up something really quick. Cause I want to make sure I don't just start flipping around.
We got to tap into the source, right?
We got to.
I think the other thing that just real quick, there's another thing that came up while you're looking that up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, especially for ministers who feel like they need to be responsible for all the people that are in their care, as far as like, let me say it this way. Someone told me once that someone came to them and said, "You're not their savior." And oftentimes people in ministry feel like it's our job to save everybody.
Yeah.
When we're really just the messengers. We're there to, and just walking in obedience. We're there to be obedient to what God has called us to do, whatever that is. But we're not fully responsible for a person's decision on whether they're going to follow Christ or not. And I think that oftentimes can lead to burnout because there's a lot of, it can be very weighty and we're just not God. Like we're not able to carry the weight that God can carry.
Exactly.
And that's kind of one of those things like praying for the power
to
maybe carry them for a little while, but really for the power to move it from us to Christ, who's going to do the real heavy lifting.
Mm.
And, so if that's you as a minister, I just, or anybody who's trying to care for someone else or walk someone else into their faith. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a pastor to do that. Don't carry that weight too heavily. Just do the things that God's calling you to do with that person and then let God do the rest of the work. And some people are going to reject it. Some people are going to say no, and you can't carry that weight yourself because it's not yours to carry.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. That needed to be shared. Now, I want to read this from Ephesians because this is what was coming to my mind as we're talking about this idea of praying for perseverance. This is at the end of Ephesians chapter 6, and it's that whole armor of God.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I feel like,
such a good verse.
Right. And as we're talking about this idea of not burning out, right?
Yeah.
Like knowing this is about.
Oh, yeah. I got to put it on.
Like,
got to put on the armor.
Right.
Let's armor up.
So, but this is what comes, right, on the tail end of him talking about this armor. And this is something that I feel like we all need to hold on to.
Yeah.
Not just for the sake of our own perseverance, but for the sake of others' perseverance as well. So we're talking about this idea of praying for perseverance, asking God to give you joy and give you strength to persevere. I think we need to pray this for ourselves, and we also need to pray it for others as Paul asks us to or tells them to right here. He says, where is it at?
I was going to say real quick on that.
Yeah.
This is where I think this is one of those things that can really appeal to men in the church.
Yes.
Like, cause I think a lot of times men just feel like churches is too soft or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And God is calling us to be warriors.
Absolutely.
He's calling us to put on armor. Absolutely. And fight a battle.
Yep.
This is like, the Bible has everything that every movie that we love as a dude.
Yep.
It has all that. Like, he's calling us to go and be a force for love. And we think love, and we think, oh, love, aww, you know,
pink hearts.
But love is a battle.
Like,
it requires a battle.
Yeah.
Because we're battling against the opposite of that.
Exactly.
Read on, good sir.
I love that you said we're battling against the opposite of that, right? And so you think about the idea of being a fierce warrior.
Yeah.
The reason why David is so often looked at as this fierce warrior and like this model of a fierce warrior is not because he fought a little midget. I was about to say somebody's name. I don't want him coming for me. But yeah, it's not because he fought a little guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because he fought Goliath. It's because he fought this big soldier that everyone else was afraid of, like this monstrosity, right? And so when we think about what makes a warrior so great, what makes the knights, right, so great in all the old movies and this idea of in fairy tales of winning the princess, it's not because they're going in and, you know, they're pushing over some little people. It's because they're fighting dragons.
Yeah.
Right? It's because they're fighting giants. It's because they're going against these formidable forces.
Yeah. We're fighting formidable forces.
Come on now.
Come on now.
Come on now.
We're fighting demons. We're fighting principalities.
Exactly, right? So it's like, that's what comes to my mind when you say we're fighting the opposite of love. We're fighting
for evil.
Everything that's right and good, right?
Yeah.
And the light. We're fighting for all of that, but that means that we're fighting against the deepest darkness, right? We're fighting against the worst of the worst. We're fighting against evil itself. And so there is no greater, more formidable opponent than what we're called to fight. That's, man.
And we have a warrior spirit.
Come on now.
It's there.
Come on now. Let's get in that battle. So right here in verse 18 of Ephesians 6, he says, right after naming the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, he says this: praying at all times in the Spirit with all prayer and supplication. To that end, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplication for all saints. And then he says, and also, here it is, and also for me, that words may be given to me, opening my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel, right? So he's saying, pray also for me, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that I may declare it boldly as I ought to speak. Now, I know there's another area as well, and maybe I'm not even going to go there, but I'm gonna see if I can look it up later. Maybe I'll come back to it.
Future episode.
Yeah. Future episode. Okay. Maybe do a little flashback on it.
Yeah.
But what's it called? That's one of those things to where, we need to be praying for one another, and we need to be praying for ourselves regularly, that God would give us perseverance, that he would give us joy in the ministry and what we're doing. So I think that's,
you know what we didn't even touch on?
What?
Part of burnout is definitely an attack of the enemy.
Oh, absolutely.
We didn't really hit that.
No, absolutely.
That much.
Yeah, no.
We talked about all the things that do fight the enemy.
Yeah, right.
But we forgot that, like, there actually is an active force.
An active, absolutely.
That's trying to burn you out.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so if you're not fighting against it, you're going to burn out.
Exactly.
Because that force is strong as well.
Exactly. That's that formidable opponent, right? And a lot of times it's not coming at you head on.
No, he likes to come through the cracks and kind of wait on some things and cause, grievances and different things. Yeah.
He likes to make it to where when everything's falling in place, And now all the prayers are being answered within your youth ministry or your the wherever you're working, right? The church is on this the right roll. You're getting doors open and favor within your workplace, right? And you're seeing Bible studies develop, and like you're seeing coworkers come to Christ, and you're when you
better
you
watch
see,
out.
No, yeah, like when all these things are falling in the place.
Yeah.
That's when you're going to have an issue at home.
Yep.
Right? That's when, and it's like,
shucks.
He's not going a lot of times. There'll be times where it seems like it's coming at you at all angles, right?
Yeah.
But the enemy is a lion, and he seeks around, and this is what lions do, right? They don't rush into the middle of the herd, right? They look for edges where they can get in and they can pick stuff off and they can cause trouble, right, on the edges. And that's why I think a lot of times you're going to end up getting where you have things going right and the enemy's plot, his ploy is to bring something else from somewhere to throw you off track.
Yeah.
Right? And it's when we are in a battle like this, everything is fair game. There's rules of war, right? Mm-hmm. There's rules of war in the real world, right? There's rules of war that America follows and not every country follows. And it's like being like that. It's like, okay, we kind of have these rules of war, right? And we're going to do things and on high ground, but the enemy does not care about your rules. Mm. He does not care that and rules of war, if we were going by rules of war, it would be like, okay, you know, if you are a pastor and this is your ministry, okay, here's the battleground, right? And so these are the men you're discipling. This is your army. Enemy doesn't care that's your army. He's going after the civilians. He's going after your kids. He's going after your wife. He's going going after those things that in rules of war, we're not supposed to mess with. Enemy don't care. Right.
And that's why we need to go to battle on our knees in prayer and bringing our families into that.
Absolutely.
That's like a whole nother message, right? We're going to talk about the separation of ministry and family and how they should not be separated.
They can't be. And that's the thing. It's like, it's your whole life.
Yeah. We'll have to talk about that another time.
It's this battle that comes at every angle in your life. And so that's one of those things. That's one of the difficulties with burnout, I feel like, is that it is all encompassing. And that it does have all these areas that you need to keep in mind. Working with some guys on pole vault the other day. And so track and field, right? Coaching track and field. When you think about running and running mechanics, when you think about jumping and jumping mechanics, you think about pole vault and pole vault mechanics. The pole vault coach said it one of the best ways. He said, this is pole vault. You're trying to think about seven, like as you're learning, you have 17 different things to keep in mind that you're trying to get down. But this is the thing. When you're running, when you're pole vaulting, when you're jumping, when you're doing all these different things, and you can think about this in lots of other sports too. I like the focus on running because not a lot of people realize how much detail goes into it, like how many different things you have to try to keep in right form and whatnot. But with that, you have to give your focus and attention to it until you're able to make it where your body just knows and you don't have to anymore, right? So that you can maybe focus on this one or these two areas and the rest of your body is going to keep on doing what it's supposed to do because you've trained it to do what it's supposed to do, right?
We got
to
train.
We have to train. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like you really do. You have to train.
Well, yeah, that's why you have to read your Bible all the time. Not just one time.
Come on now. Right? Come on.
Got to be training all the time.
And that's part of the battle. I'm telling you, it's part of the battle. It's that daily discipline. Those spiritual disciplines is part of the battle. It's one of those things to where when you are going back and forth on your disciplines of whether or not you're spending time in your word, you're spending time in prayer, you're doing these different things. Again, kind of referring back to what Jesus said, right? This kind only comes out by prayer and fasting. The prayer and the fasting, that's the training ground for this battle that may come your way, right? And so
The enemy knows that.
And the enemy knows that.
So he's going to try to
knock
attack
you
that
off
too.
Your training. Yes. He's going to try to knock you
That's
off your training.
That's why we're always like, listen to me. That is why every time you try to read the Bible and you want to go do it, there's something that comes up.
Absolutely.
And we're always like, oh, well, I just don't know why I don't have enough time.
Yeah.
That's the enemy attacking.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He doesn't want you to have that time.
Yep.
He knows that. So you have to be so intentional with like, no, we're doing this.
Yeah.
We're going to read every day. And man, I can tell you like, many times I have not been good at this and it'll probably happen again because it's so easy. Like even just like as we've gotten into a good routine, my wife and I, there's been times where we're like, we drop out of it for a few days and we're like, what the heck happened?
Yeah. Let's get back to it.
Gosh, we got to get back into that. Yeah. We can't let that slide.
Man. But again, that's so good that you're saying like you and your wife, you're looking at each other and say, hey, we need to get back. You're doing it as a team.
Yeah.
You're going, and that's what a family is supposed to be. Right?
Which, by the way, we didn't do for a long time. It was kind of crazy how long we didn't do it together.
Yeah.
Because we're both believers, and we for a long time we've been together. And there's times where we pray together, but for some reason, it was so easy for us to do it separate. And I think that was also just like the enemy putting things in our mind, like making it hard for us to do it together for some reason.
Well, and remember what I said earlier.
But when
earlier,
we started to do it together, man, things are different.
Absolutely. Remember what I said earlier, right? When you start having those conversations, you start getting into those places where you're supposed to, it's awkward at first.
It is awkward at first.
Right? It's awkward at first. And so you have to push past that discomfort of having these conversations, spending this time in prayer, saying these certain things, right? We have to be able to push past that uncomfort and how awkward and wrong those things can go, right? And realize that this is a priority. This is a discipline that we need to carry out.
This is my armor.
This is my armor, right? And so,
I think that's it. We got to recognize the weight. Right? We got to this isn't just because I'm supposed to or like some kind of routine that God wants us to do. It's like, no, that's where the power is going to come. That's the weights that are going to grow the muscles so that you can fight the battles. Cause we're all going to fight the battles.
Yeah.
If you don't have the weights then and the time, you're not going to fight it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the weight of it and realizing that it's worth that time. Like we have to make it a priority. A lot of these things that we mention and that's something that anytime I'm listening to conversations about burnout, things that we can do, right, to help overcome that, the practices that we can develop. Anytime that me and you were talking about unity and the practices that we can develop, right, all these different things, it takes time.
Yeah.
Right. It takes time. And we have to make a conscious decision that, hey, it's worth the time.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's one of those things, especially when it comes even all the way back, going full circle, right, to our abiding. Right. It's so easy to jump into doing rather than abiding because it's like, man, there's things that got to get done. Right. We have to do it. We have to be a good steward and we got to do things. Right. But.
And it feels good.
And it feels good
to check off the list.
Come on now. Right.
Yep.
Like to be able to check stuff off the list. Oh, man, that can feel so good.
Yeah.
But we have to prioritize that abiding space, that being in relationship space, those things that, yes, they take time away from things that we could be getting done, but realizing, look, this is where the true power is, right?
Apart from me, you can do nothing. That's right? such a big statement.
You may think you're doing something.
You're doing something.
You may think you because you're casting out demons and you're performing miracles and you're raising hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars.
Even that,
right?
We couldn't do that without the name of Jesus, though. So even that, like, there's like a lack of power if we're not doing it with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, even anything else, though.
Right.
It's like, you just can't do it.
You can do all these amazing.
Or you could do a lot of things. They're just not going to have any eternal value.
They're not going to have the right fruit.
Yeah.
Right. Like
I'm constantly like something, I think it's something else that just you start realizing when you're getting older. It's like, nobody's going to really remember you specifically in a couple hundred years. And unless you're like a president of the United States or something. Yeah. But even then,
even
like,
then, there's so many that's gonna fade eventually. Yeah.
Like, and most people aren't going to know.
No.
Like, I can't name most of the presidents.
No, absolutely not.
You know,
absolutely.
We learned it in high school, but
yeah.
I can't remember most of them and who they were.
Yeah.
Beyond that,
you like, can look it up.
Beyond just being the president, like who they were, yeah. That's a I don't know that.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know what kind of person they were or, mm-hmm. or any of that kind of stuff. And that's all going to get lost.
Yeah.
But the things that we do with God have eternal value.
Come on now.
Like, we're talking about the rest of eternity
yeah.
here and other people getting to enjoy that with us.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's the kind of fruit I want.
Yep. Absolutely. Oh man. All right. I think that's time. I think that's time. We
yeah, we probably went over time.
Oh, we definitely did on this one. but that's all right. That's all right. We'll make a, maybe we'll make the next one a little shorter, but whatever.
yeah.
All right. Well, let's definitely, I want us to just close in prayer. We're going to pray for this. We're going to pray for that perseverance. And we'll close right there. Would you mind, praying
yeah,
out on this
sure,
one?
Sure. I'll pray for us. Lord, I pray for boldness and perseverance, God. Yeah. Make us into warriors for your kingdom, now. Lord. But no, let us not forget in our battles and on our desire to go do those things, mm-hmm. to just spend time with you
yes.
and just be with you. Abide, Lord, that you may impart with us the knowledge and the wisdom and the things to move forward into those things that you've called us to do.
Absolutely.
And God, let's just enjoy your fatherhood. Enjoy being with a father that deeply loves us and created us and wants to be with us. And it doesn't have to be that way, but God, you made it that way. And we're so grateful. So I pray for anybody listening to this, Lord, that may or may not know who you are, that they can just grow in deeper relationship every single day through the things we might've talked about here. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you for joining us for the In Hope podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Remember, we want you to be part of the conversation. So comment, like, share, and follow. Also, we want you to consider being a ministry partner with us. For as little as $2 a month, you can help continue this podcast and other ministries that teach about unity and invest in collaborative efforts. Connect with us via social media throughout the week, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Monday on the In Hope podcast.